But there was one guy who couldn't stand you. A good friend of mine. He just said, yeah, who's that Scottish guy? I can't stand this guy. Like, what do you mean? That's Adam. He does the show. He said, yeah, I always switch off when he's on. So, all right, fair enough. No use.
Really? I don't know if you're like, you're joking.
I'm not joking. But I'm disappointed he said that because I didn't even get to the point where I asked him why. But then I had another conversation with somebody else, right? Totally unrelated. And they actually preferred listening to you rather than me or anybody else. And they were saying, yeah, I love that guy, Adam. He's amazing. So
listen, see your mate who doesn't like me and switches off when I'm on it. Do you want to just connect us online? And I'm happy to meet up with him personally and have a conversation about that.
That sounds quite threatening. He's a nice guy, mate. He's a nice guy. I wouldn't ever put him in that situation. He's never played rugby before in his life either. So I wouldn't put him in danger. Anyway,
I've got my first game in 7 years tomorrow.
Really? I thought you got injured last season and vowed never to do go.
No, I broke my ankle 7 years ago and I haven't played proper rugby since. I've only played touch rugby, but proper.
Oh, game. Is this full contact, is it?
Yeah.
You're not coming back off the field, mate. It's as
simple as that. That's what my wife said.
It's not happening. I mean, be ready. Yeah, be ready. I see you in hospital, mate. It's going to be... The thing is, it won't even be a contact event. It'll be you running down the sideline or wherever, getting a fucking jug of water, and you'll pull your... You'll do your Achilles or something like that. It'll be like a seriously bad injury doing something very, very mundane. It will be... Anyway, good luck with that. Right, we're ready. We're live, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 124, bringing it to you every Friday. Thank you so much for joining the show again. We've got an absolutely bumper crowd today. Look at the number of people here, 384. And I think that is the third highest Brain Food Live we've had this year. And it's been the highest we've had for a long, long time. I think in the very early part of the year, first couple of weeks in January, we topped that, 400 or so. But 385 people, that's huge. That's like mini event level, right? So thank you, everybody, for joining the show on Crowdcast. Really appreciate it. Okay, let's do a few sound checks as we usually do, just to make sure everyone can hear us okay. There's loads of chat happening on the chat stream, so that's working okay. But can you hear me okay? Let me know whether you can. Just say hello on the chat stream. It's just to make sure the audio is okay there. We're live on LinkedIn. Again, it's a blank screen, but I'm hoping you can hear me on LinkedIn. If you can hear me on LinkedIn, give me some sort of emoji. Let me know that you can hear me okay. Say hello. Say get on with it, hung, whatever you need to do. We are also multicasting on the Facebook group, which I can't see, but I think that's live. I'm trusting that. And I think we should be good on Periscope still. I think so. That's cool. Excellent. Everyone is there. Right. Let's kick off with a bit. Firstly, thank you to our sponsors. Our sponsors this week are CA3. They are a cool onboarding tool coming out of the UK. I think they came out of it as a kind of an employer branding type of consultancy, a design type consultancy. But they've got some really interesting like products coming out as well as their, PS work. So they've got Eli Onboarding, which is an onboarding tool. They also provide great stuff in terms of how you communicate to the wider audience. And it's very fitting that we're getting them to sponsor the show today because it's all about communication, isn't it? How do you have better communication, often internally with key stakeholders such as hiring managers? And that's going to be the topic of today. Anyway, let's welcome back Adam Gordon to the hot seat. Adam, good to see you, sir. How was your week?
Good week, thank you. I just came out of a 2-hour meeting and got here bang on time. I was thinking about it. I don't think I've ever let you down by being late. I always join maybe 2 seconds before
bang
you
on, bang on bang on time is late.
Bang on no, time is late. That's turnkey just in time. Manufacturing excellence.
No. I mean, back in the day when we had to press a few buttons, that might have been okay. But these days, it's like cutting it real fine. Thing is, I don't have a contingency plan if you actually don't show up one time. I haven't thought about it. Like, what do I do?
We'll have to agree to disagree on that. On time is bang on time. And the other thing that I have never done is I've never let you down by not having read the newsletter.
Yes, you have always read the newsletter, which is good stuff. So let's dive into that. Last week, what was interesting about the newsletter, Adam?
Well, I'll tell you what's really interesting is the fact that recruitment is front page news. It's like the first thing on the radio, you know, when it goes to the news, the first thing they talk about is recruitment now. It's big stuff and it's very exciting. So the Independent Association of Meat Producers, I think it was, something like that. So they have announced they're putting in some programs to hire ex-offenders into the industry. That's great. But what really caught my eye was actual prisoners as well. People that are incarcerated are, they're obviously getting out on leave, day leave or whatever, to come and work in the meat industry. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, this is quite good. It's quite good. It's really good for, you know, offenders. It's good for the industry. And, you know, if I was a Brexiteer, I'd be thinking, as long as it keeps those damn Spanish and Germans out of our country, then that's great as well. Of course, I don't think like that at all. But anyway, I think bringing people, you know, being creative with how you get jobs filled is something that is front page news. And the other bit that we've heard in the news recently in the last 2 days is, of course, Wetherspoons, Tim Martin, big Brexit champion. Wetherspoons have run out of beer because they don't have enough drivers to drive beer around the country.
You know what? It's a very interesting period because some of the Brexit kind of chickens are coming home to roost. And one of them was, let's get rid of all the foreigners. Okay, we've done that. And now actually it turns out they're critically important for lots of parts of the economy, including things like truck driving. And it turns out you need at least 12 months to train a truck driver who must already have a license that's driver that you can use in the UK, which I think is different licensing laws now are out of the EU. But you also need on top a HGV license. It takes 12 months. And it's not particularly highly paid. It's hard sort of job. It's long hours. It's driving away from a family, etc. Not many people want to do it. So this is why we have a food shortage in the UK, which is actually a stunning thing for a country that is, certainly one of the richest countries in the world, right? I mean, you wouldn't expect this type of stuff going on. Teething problems maybe, but the reality of it is some of the solutions that seem to be being brought to fore are actually quite alarming, like the use of prison labor, for instance. I think you and I have talked about sort of trying to get the formerly incarcerated back to work. Very important we do that.
Sure, yeah.
Very, very important we do that. But the way to do it is to do it like Timpsons do it. Set aside 10% of their workforce in order to hire former ex-offenders into their workforce. That's like what you should do. What you kind of shouldn't be doing is having governments start piping in people in prison or put people on day release and saying now work in an abattoir, shorten your sentence by doing that. Similar to how the US do it, I think in California, like a lot of the firefighters in California are actually incarcerated prisoners. Did you know that? And they're risking life and limb trying to put out these fires.
Yeah.
And their little carrot on the end of the stick is, yeah, shorten your sentence. That to me is problematic. Very difficult to think about. Have a read of that and have a chew down on it and have a think about what we've got to do. You know, it's not like an easy thing, but I think it's time for reflection. You know, where are we? Where we kind of are dependent on indentured labor to do some of the essential things in society. We need to have a big kind of revision as to how we do a lot of things in there, I think. Give us another one, man.
I like the article, which was headed something like nerds don't respond to marketing,
right?
Like technical stuff.
Yeah.
Absolutely. This is, however, what I think we need to consider is everything is marketing. Every content is marketing. Every touch point is marketing. It's all about experience design. We had Steve on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about experience design. Every single touch point with somebody is marketing. So I wouldn't necessarily differentiate, but what we definitely need to think about is what is the message that's going to get somebody to do the next thing that we want them to do? And it's very rare with a technical in-demand talent kind of talent pool, it's very rare that the message that's going to get them to do what you want them to do is, hey, what about this job? Or, hey, we offer these benefits in our company. They probably don't care about that. How do you turn their heads? How do you get them interacting with you? It's probably something that's way further up the funnel. And what have you got in common with them? What's going to generate goodwill, be useful, be relevant? Technical content, absolutely. Not just for nerds, but for any what I would call in-demand talent. So people in healthcare, people in like accounting and legal, things like that. They're all going to respond a bit further up the funnel to things that they've got in common with that hiring manager or with the team in which you might like to bring them in to join. So it's great that this subject is getting more appreciation. I think it was on Hacker Noon, this particular one.
Yeah, I've just shared it in a chat stream. I totally recommend you take a look at it, folks. It's what I liked about this is the very kind of astute observation that not only do technical people not respond to marketing, but they actively disdain it. So in other words, and I totally get that, you know, I mean, they basically disrespect the idea that they're being sold to, and you don't want to be doing that. But there's other stuff that they read, there's other content that they consume. And the concept here is, look, if you're going to talk about your company or your employer brand, maybe you want to talk about it in those places that they're going to consume that information, typically in technical documentation or stuff like that. So if you're struggling to recruit the hard to hire, make yourself have a read of that post. I think it might give you some ideas to what you might be able to do. And it's almost about where you locate your message. It's less about trying to pitch it by email or whatever, but write it in a place where these people might be naturally or willing to consume that information. Okay, one more, man, before we get onto the topic, Adam.
Ageism.
Yes.
People over 25 are on the scrap heap. They're not getting jobs anymore. You got to be between 12 and 25 to get the best jobs today. In seriousness, I really liked this person's article, which was, I'm Gen X, but on paper now I'm a millennial. Because I think it was a he was just quite clever in terms of the way that he's gone about pitching himself on like things like LinkedIn and of course in his CV and things like that. So that actually, you know, 25 years experience comes across as maybe 12 years experience because he's been creative in the way that he's gone about not including necessarily everything. And so yeah, this is something that we need to, of course, we've needed to do this in the other way as well. So we needed to do it in when you're like 22 and you've actually not got huge amounts to talk about. You've got to really try and amplify what it is you've actually achieved at that point. So now we've got to do things the other way as well. And we've got to maybe, you know, try and condense what we've done to make us look maybe younger.
You know what, that's really it was a really interesting post, and by the way, folks, I've just shared the link in the chat stream there as well. Do take a look at it. I think what you're going to learn from it is the measures that the mature workforce, the veteran workforce, have to take in order to be just getting their a chance, their foot through the door. And this person recognized that actually the length of experience that they actually had was a deterrent. And recruiters, that's us, were basically screening her out. I think it was her, actually, now that I've read it again, we're screening out people with 25 years plus experience. It's like, nope, too old. And we're just mentally focusing on the first 10 years, last 10 years of experience. And she literally cut it down and just referred to the 10 years. Now, she managed to get a job and converted that situation, which is all well and good. But obviously, that kind of unlocks a kind of a different era. I think I call it a subterranean bias. We're not talking about sort of ageism very much. We don't seem to have any sort of solutions to that. You know, I don't see anybody doing anything about it. It's still left up to the front of house operational recruiter to make a decision. And typically it seems that we're screening those folks out. So anyway, we're going to do a show on this in a couple of weeks' time. We're going to talk about ageism in recruitment. We're going to talk about what candidates should be doing, taking some inspiration from this individual here, but also what recruiters should be doing also. Like, how can we think about helping people, giving them a legitimate chance at a job or an opportunity to get involved in an interview process without sort of having them experiencing these additional hurdles. So that's on recruiters. I think we do have a role to play there. Okay.
There's a couple of other aspects to this that I just want to quickly talk about. So, for example, I mentioned my wife occasionally on this show. She's chief marketing officer for a very big company, and she often feels like she's meant to know all of the details. She's got a team of 60 people, as I. She feels like she's always got to know all the details of all the technical aspects of little things that her team does around pay-per-click and, you know, website, you know, movements and things like that. And she finds it a little bit difficult to accept that as she's got older, she has had to step away from all of those, you know, things that she feels like she does need to have technical knowledge on. That's one thing. As you become more senior in your career, you can't know everything. And so naturally, that's a thing which is about losing some technical skills as you're kind of progressing in your career. And
you're talking something else there, though, because you're talking, because sometimes a lot of these folks have not necessarily gone down the management track.
In the case of the example that we read, yeah, she hadn't.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I totally get what you're saying. The skills fade, it's called. You know, as the less you're involved in the skill, it'll disappear over time. Yeah. And I think all of us are very sensitive to that. I'm very conscious of it. Having not actively recruited for like 10 years, I have no idea what I'm doing. It's very important to recognize it. But in this instance, it's almost like, what do you do if you're an older person? You're involuntarily in the workforce. You found yourself that way, and you can't sort of get any traction, and you're finding yourself doing way too much effort to get zero response. And by the way, when you're in that kind of more veteran stage of your life, typically you have higher costs. You may still be supporting other people. You may have still bills to pay for kids and stuff like this, schooling and whatnot. It can be a very, very stressful time. So it's something we need to talk about more on. Follow the channel, by the way, if you want to get notified for the show when it's happening. I think it's in 2 weeks' time. Anyway, let's get on with the topic to hand. We're talking about intake meetings, or as we might want to rebrand it, recruitment strategy meetings. The first meeting we have with a hiring manager. When a recruiter has an opportunity or the hiring manager needs to fill a vacancy, we get a meeting with this person. How do we do that better? Quickly to you, Adam, give us one thought as to where the state of play is, to where we're at. Are we doing this well? Like, how do recruiters typically do this, and how do we improve it really?
Yeah, I mean, some are obviously doing it a lot better than others, but I think you need a kind of contract. You need some kind of a service level agreement. I think between TA and every other function within an organization, you need a service level agreement, which is, if the hiring manager does not agree to our SLA, service will be withdrawn. Because the amount of wasted time and therefore money I see with recruiters going back, and the hiring manager goes, well, actually, we're thinking about changing it. See that thing that wasn't mandatory? I'm going to make it mandatory now, or the other way around. You know, so signing off on exactly what are the mandatory knockout criteria, and then what's the nice to have criteria, you know, I think that's really vital at the beginning, and making sure that hiring managers blame recruitment all the time for things not going well. And
of course,
you know, so having a service level agreement at the beginning, that's my contribution. So, you know, my one thing to contribute at the beginning.
Yeah, by the way, I'm going to create a list of these things at the end of the show. Hopefully, we'll be able to share it. So it's going to be something we can all use and get value from. Okay, so the first one is document the agreement, or have some sort of agreement with the hiring manager. Don't leave it informal, because you just don't know whether there'll be breaking of that kind of tacit agreement. You've got to make it explicit. Okay, let's bring on some of our guests. We're going to go two by two simply because of sort of time zones and stuff like this. So let's bring on Mark. I think he's there. I can see him in the chat stream, so we'll bring him on. I think Libby is here as well. So let's try Libby. There she is. There we go. And then Mary Kay and Christy, we're going to bring you on after we kind of rotate through. So let's do it like this. So we can get people on. You know what? I used to think I was really good at this this part of the process. There's Mark. Mark, how are you doing? Good to see you, sir.
Yeah, good to see you as well. I'm doing fine.
Excellent.
It's Friday and it's sunny. So I'm good.
Indeed. Mark, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, and what it is you do?
Of course. So my name is Mark. I'm a senior recruiter at GitLab nowadays. I am a huge fighter for these kind of things, like kickoff or strategy meetings, or however you want to call it. And I'm trying to slowly change recruitment a little bit by a little bit. I'm doing a podcast as well about this. How do you do sourcing? How do you engage with candidates? Those kind of things. That's me in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's a great podcast, by the way, folks. Definitely make sure you follow that, particularly if you're interested in the more technical aspects of sourcing and what have you. Okay, we have Libby here as well. Libby, good to see you. Can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you and what it is you do?
Thanks, Hung. So I'm Libby Fox. I'm currently working at Payout. I joined a couple of months ago, so I'm their talent acquisition and people specialist. So I'm kind of doing a recruitment HR hybrid after spending 2.5 years in agency in Nottingham and then 2.5 years at booking.com as a finance and legal recruiter.
Cool. This is great experience. And you two are both kind of at the core phase, still talking to hiring managers, still picking up these requirements. So this is perfect people to talk to. Now, I called it intake meeting and I was like hammered on the chat stream saying, Hung, your biggest problem is that you're calling it intake meeting. this is like a subservient way of describing it. Stop calling it this. And I'm taking this on board. Like, how important is the terminology? Is that significant or is it just like words? What are your thoughts?
Potatoes, potatoes. It really doesn't matter as long as the message is clear between them. It's as a recruitment, you're doing a service, but it's a partnership, right? And as long as it's clear that it's a partnership and not just, hey, I'm following your orders, that's a huge difference. But how you call it, I don't care. It shouldn't care.
What about you, Libby?
Generally, I do agree with that. As long as you get exactly what you want to get out of it when you went into it, you know, that idea, everything you need, A to Z. However, I have to say that my experience in agency, it was an intake meeting because that's all of the information about the business. There was a lot more to it, I would say, in terms of actually, as you were saying before, Adam, the contract, right? That is so pivotal in an agency role. Whereas for in-house, both in the corporate and a startup, for me, it's a kickoff. Kickoff, how we're going to do it, strategizing with the hiring managers. And it's like an exciting, we're launching this role into the environment, into the market. So, yeah, I would say for me now, kickoff.
What was the problem with intake that people had?
It was basically a signal that we were just the receiver of, like, it was an unequal relationship, and we were just like absorbing the information.
Yeah.
And now that Libby's made the point of agency versus in-house, I wonder whether intake meeting has come from agency language, where the relationship is a bit different, because we are the supplier, we're there to deliver, quote unquote. There isn't oftentimes a relationship pre-built. We're almost like the first person in. We're desperate for the work. Therefore, we are a little bit of a supplicant. Whereas when you're in-house, you know, you've got to really position more strategically and you've got to think, you know what, I can't, in your terms, Mark, you can't just yes everything because that's actually doing the company a disservice. I'd love to know what you think, folks. Let me know whether the terminology is important. Do you agree it's important, or do you think actually no? It's just semantics. Okay. By the way, for people on Crowdcast, if you've got any questions for our guests, use the Ask a Question feature at the bottom of the screen. We'll get to them at the end of the show. Right. Let's have a look at sort of the something you mentioned, Libby, like what you meant to get out of the meeting. As you walking into one of these events. There's like an agenda in your own mind, like there's a few things you need to emerge from out of this. What are those things exactly?
Yeah, 100%. Well, I copied and pasted this into the comment section, Hung, for your LinkedIn comments. So if anyone wants to have reference to it, then they can see it on there. But for me, I have had pretty much the standard template, I would say, throughout the entire 5 years that I've done recruitment. So we need to think about the logistics of the role, you know, actually what the hiring manager is envisaging in terms of where this person is going to be located, remote, on-site, hybrid nowadays. what career level they will be. So in terms of the actual structure of the team, how that will work, and what that will mean in terms of the profile that we're looking for as well. So tick off the logistics at first. I will then go into questions about the role. So day-to-day responsibilities, what this person will be focusing on, short, medium, long-term, what their main goals will be. And then with that as a basis, obviously you can ask a load of questions around that as well. Hopefully it's more kind of a free-flowing conversation rather than a tick the box exercise, right? Because you're also building a relationship with the hiring manager. That's fundamental for me to come out of the meeting with as well, having spent that time with them. And often, you know, especially when I was at booking in a corporate, such precious time as well. So it's really important to establish that relationship too. Third section, I would say, is of course based on the actual profile. So thinking about what type of candidate they would want, the year's experience. I would then ask about the must-haves, nice-to-haves. My approach to the must-haves, nice-to-haves is I just want them to tell me everything that is on their mind so I can get it all down, write all the notes down. You know, if this is face-to-face, I'll still have my laptop in front of me writing this all down. If it's remote, I'll still have the document on the side of my screen, so that I have all of that information and I can pick and choose afterwards if I need to ask any more questions and dive in deeper. After that, I will then go into the internal question mark over whether there is anyone that can go into that role. Are we missing any internal talent? And of course, as per every recruiter, especially in the engineering side of things, I'm learning now, the sourcing side, what do I need to know to go into the market? I've had to learn completely on the job in the last few months what this role would look like, what the name would be in other companies, what the structures of other companies would be. And often the hiring manager has an understanding of what this would look like and replicate in the market. So I need all of that information from them as well. And then of course, the selling points. What makes this different to everyone else that we're competing against in the market? So I can use that content for my reach outs, for the job advert, et cetera, et cetera. So ultimately, I get a full understanding of where this hiring manager sees, how this hiring manager sees this role, what it means for the company, and what I can then take out into the market as well.
Yeah, that's great, Libby. Thanks a lot for that breakdown. And I do recommend that you check out the sort of Libby's comment on the thread I shared on the chat stream earlier. And if you're on LinkedIn, you can see it on my LinkedIn activity. I go to LinkedIn posts, actually. My activities are probably all over the place. It'll be scroll down there, you know, number 4 or 5, you'll be able to see that post. And in that, there's about 150 comments already. So lots of great content already in there. I love the structure of this. One thing you said I thought was quite interesting was the time you have with the manager actually is really important, because in a big corporate, maybe that's the first and only time you'd ever meet this person. Yeah. In which case, like, you can't just treat that as, oh, here's the information, I got it, see you later. You've also got to have this subtext of, you know what, I've got to build a rapport with this person and really, you know, get the sense that they know who I am, I know who they are. And do that type of rapport building. Mark, have you got any thoughts on this, the rapport side? Like, how, because you've just joined a new company with GitLab. So I'd be interested to know how you go about doing this, you know, the rapport side of things, particularly when it is remote and distributed. New manager, never met him before, never met you, maybe wasn't involved in getting you in the team, but there you are as a new recruiter. How do you take on this? Okay, I need to build rapport with this person and make sure there's a channel of communication open where, you know, we can solve problems.
So what I normally do is make sure that the first time even before I start recruiting for them, that I have a meeting, at least with the hiring manager, and I reach out to the team as well, because the hiring manager is a huge source of information. But the actual information that you really want to know lies with the engineers or the salespeople, whoever you want to know, right? So I always, the first meeting is always an hour. First half hour is just chit chat, just about life. Hey, how did you join the company? Do you have a family? Those kind of things, to actually start a human relationship instead of that. Hey, I'm your recruiter. I'm going to serve you. I'm going to help you. So it's first getting an actual connection, and then we'll slowly go into the team. And often I don't even discuss the actual rec on that first meeting. Often that's later on. I want to make sure that we are on the same page on how we think about things, how we do things, what they can expect from me, what I expect from them, those kind of things.
That's a really good point. What do you think about that, folks? Like, approach people like almost without an agenda. If you go in there purely agenda driven, suddenly it's very functional. You know, maybe it's like, okay, that's tick, as you say, tick in a box, job done. But is it really relationship building? The strongest relationships are often those where there isn't a fixed agenda, that you come in just to get to know somebody, pay attention to what their opinions are on various things. That could be very useful. I think if you manage to do it, it's something you should make time for. But that's obviously additional time, isn't it, Mark? So it as is. A busy recruiter, there's big pressure. But you've got to kind of recognize it to say, you know what, that's going to save me time down the line to have that early meeting.
That's what I wanted to say. It's going to save you time in the end, a lot of time, yeah. Because there's a lot of information coming about the person and the team in that call, although it's about everything else that you can actually anticipate and use in your whole strategy. And the second thing is, yes, it costs time, but the hiring manager knows that it's valuable time. As long as you make it a virtual meeting. Now, I'm lucky, I'm in a remote setting. So all communication is always deliberate. How it works in an office, I honestly have no clue. that's so long ago that I've done that. But when you're remote, everything is more deliberate. So even the conversation is almost, even when you talk about family, it's more deliberate. It's more into mm-hmm. focusing on the actual person instead of, hey, how's the weather? That doesn't happen.
I'll tell you something, folks. This also tells me a little bit about the requirement load that a recruiter should have or can possibly have. Because if there are too many hiring managers that you need to handle, it may be impossible for you to have those conversations and build those relationships, right? And now maybe that's a different lens in which we could think about requirement load. Like, we all often think about how much recruiters are overworked and we count the number of requirements. Are we actually counting the number of hiring managers they have to interface with? Because it's a different story if you're hiring 12 roles with 12 different managers compared to hiring 12 roles with one manager. You have a totally different set of workload there.
That's a whole different discussion, because then you're also going to look into, you can have 15 recs as a person and think you're overwhelmed, or you can have, well, I'm over 30 now and I'm still doing fine, because how does your team work with you? How complex are those roles? All those kind of things, right? So looking at pure workload, I always hated that question in interviewing recruiters. What's your workload? It doesn't say anything, because you don't know the setting, you don't know the context.
Absolutely right. It's basically more complicated than we anticipate. Okay, let's have a look at this sort of idea of so building rapport. You mentioned a non-agenda meeting sort of to begin with. That's all well and good. Let's imagine you're beyond that and you're at the requirement stage. There is a role. Maybe it sits on your desk via this hiring manager who said, you know what, we need this. How do you go and have that conversation with them? Bearing in mind, you haven't had the technical chat yet. Maybe you haven't had the SLA chat yet. How do you lead that first conversation and frame it in such a way that you're going to have a productive relationship going forward?
So the beautiful thing is, what you can do is already send them sort of a I call it the friendly template. So kind of a kickoff document already, where at least you make them think about what you're going to discuss. That's a huge time saver, because they already know what you're going to talk about. And the simple things should be in that document. You shouldn't even be talking about that, like location, all those kind of things. Those details don't really matter for what you're looking for in the end, because it's a set thing, right? If you need somebody in APAC, you need somebody in APAC. You can discuss why, but it only adds a little bit of information. So what I normally do is I ask questions on that doc already from, hey, what are you missing? Think about it. I'm not asking them to write it down. I'm asking them to think about it. What kind of value add do you need? Because there's a huge difference in asking somebody, what are you looking for and what are you missing? If you ask them, what are you looking for? You get the perfect candidate. They have 10 years of experience in this. They have done A, B, and C, skill C, D, and E. If you ask them what you're missing, then you're actually starting a conversation about what does your team look like? And what are they actually doing? And what kind of skills do you miss? And it's not just, in my case, technical skills, but also people skills. Do you have a, let's say it like this. Every time I ask this question, I get an answer, oh, crap, I need a person that leads the team, or I need a person that glues the team together. You don't get that answer if you just ask, what are you looking for? So that's the main question. And that question answers almost all of your questions that follow up. It's just getting more into detail. But that first one answers most questions.
You know what? I love that. And also, I remember actually our friend Katrina Kibben, who's a consultant who helps companies write job descriptions and job ads and stuff like this. She sent a tweet out, I think, yesterday, something to a similar effect, where it was a case of, you know what, you should ask what's missing in the team. And the response to that actually will, all of the responses cascade into that. That will fill in most of the stuff you need to know. But firstly, I like the idea of sending a document pre-meeting, almost to get them to think about it. It's almost like a Jeff Bezos style, hey, here's this thing. Have a think about it. Don't just rock up to the meeting, Mr. Hiring Manager or Mrs. Hiring Manager, thinking you can just like wing it as you go. It's actually a serious meeting. It's a big commitment of time.
It's commitment from both sides, right? Because you have to commit as well. The only thing you shouldn't be doing is make it so easy that you basically ask them all the questions and the conversation is going to be empty. Because you still have those forms where everything is settled. And I'm like, that's asking them to do homework. Nobody likes homework. So it has to be a conversation starter, not homework.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is what I was about to ask. I mean, how often do we turn up for a meeting with the hiring manager? We've asked them to think about something in advance and they haven't done a thing. They're not prepared at all. I mean, that is very likely to happen a lot of the time. So we have to bear in mind that recruitment is one of, you know, probably the maybe four most important priorities for that individual. And they may or may not prioritize it as number one, or they might put it as number eight and expect you just to provide the service and then the person starts on day one. So that, the whole concept of getting your priority further up their list of priorities is something you need a lot of skill to be able to do.
And that's why you have to build that rapport up front before you even do the first time kickoff.
Agreed.
Because so that's where you actually get that point. Yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree, Mark. I think it sounds like I'm kind of doing a bit of a hybrid of what you're doing as well, you know, trying to build up the rapport as I'm asking the kickoff questions and things. And actually, unlike what we were saying before, where it becomes a kind of a contractual agreement, yes, this is it, is exactly what I need to do and find for you, and this is everything that's done and dusted, I would say that actually it's the alignment meeting for me that really brings everything together. So that's in my interview process, in my hiring process, I would say kickoff meeting, alignment meeting, feedback session, right? And obviously some bits in between, but those are the three steps for me. The alignment meeting, I plan in 2 weeks after the kickoff meeting so that I've had some time to go into the market. The role's allowed to breathe for a couple of weeks. I've been able to speak to some candidates maybe, and also done some headhunting. So I then come to the hiring manager, if I need to, in between those 2 weeks, in between the kickoff and the alignment meeting, with, hey, look, you said X, Y, Z, we can only have X, but this looks pretty good. Are you willing to make this must have into a nice to have? And then we can open up this whole market for what we're looking for. And then it's in the alignment meeting in front of the whole interview panel as well, which is a really good thing in a startup, I found, because people have a lot of opinions about what is really acceptable in the environment, which is completely understandable. You know, sometimes a role can come in and it can scupper their own chances of development, right? So it really has a straightaway impact. So then in the alignment meeting, I'm saying to everyone in the interview panel, you know, looking in their eyes, if not in the camera, this is what we're having, this is what we're hiring, do you all agree? If not, raise your hand and say something now, because then that really has the impact. And I actually can go back to the alignment meeting and say, look, this person has all of this. We said we would hire someone on this basis. Where's my offer coming from, you know? So I would say that it's the kickoff and alignment meeting that are kind of the absolute dual combination. Like, it's, you can't have one without the other.
Yeah, I'm talking about, sorry, what you're talking about, Libby, is really ways of, in fact, both of you are talking about, is really ways of taking control of the process and making sure that it doesn't break down. I wonder if there is, I don't know if anybody's done this. If they have, please comment. I wonder if there's a way of taking that concept a slightly further ahead. And that is when the hiring manager talks to you and says, right, I've got a vacancy coming up. Mm. And then that first meeting, you're saying, okay, who's going to be in my team to make this happen? So you're in my team. hiring manager, who that works in your area, who that's doing the job is in my team. Mm. And you positioning it as this is the recruitment team, which is me as a recruiter, you as the hiring manager, somebody else in the team. And by the way, I'm the team leader, so I will tell you what to do. And so it's even taking it even a bit further forward of the sort of I'm in charge here.
Yeah. It isn't actually that far off as what we're doing at GitLab at the moment. I was super surprised when I saw this. But we dog food our own product, right? So we use GitLab. And the hiring manager and the interviewers are in there. The sorcerer is in there. I'm in there. And basically, I lead the whole thing. And everybody contributes. And it kind of works better. It's async, right? So you kind of need to. But everybody is pressured because something's changing. Okay. It comes into GitLab. Everybody knows it directly. People can pitch in. Hold on, why is this changing? So you're constantly evaluating your own efforts. So it's an ongoing meeting without the pleasantry, basically. So it's been done in companies. Yeah. This was the first time for me as well. I was surprised, and it works really well. So I exactly know who's in my team. I have everybody pitching in. I even have people on the team screening with me to see, hey, what are we looking for? Those kind of things. So you're constantly balancing your rack there. You're constantly saying, hold on.
On that, I love all of this, by the way, because it's kind of, you've got to involve all of the stakeholders as early as you can without sort of having just, you know, because sometimes the hiring managers there is very defensive of their team's time, etc. They're saying, don't bother the engineers, don't bother this, that, and the other. They're blocking it. And then, of course, it's the engineers that end up doing the interviewing and the technical testing and all this. And, you know, there's a disconnect there. They're not involved in the conversation. They've never chatted with you. If you hadn't taken Mark's approach in terms of pre kind of having that conversation, but unless you did sort of sort that conversation flow out, you might just find actually you've got an antagonistic relationship with the hiring manager and nothing ever happens from that. It just increases frustration. And of course, in that scenario, it might be very, very difficult to fix. It may not be fixable at all, actually, if you let that one fester. So get the stakeholders in as soon as you can. Okay, folks, we're running like really super late on time, and I want to keep on going at pace. So let's talk about very quickly after the meeting. You've had this meeting. You've absorbed some of this information. What do you send the hiring manager? After this, what do you send them? I mean, I typically send them an email saying, yeah, we've agreed this. What do you think? But is that good enough? Does it need to be like a formalized document? Is it purely about the role, or is this where you put the SLA in? Like, how does all this work? Thoughts?
I always send a summary. And in my case, like I said, we do this in the system, right? In GitLab itself. So it's already all there. I try to make it as complete as possible. And that's not for me. That's not for the hiring manager. That's for the person that's filling in when I get on a bus or when I'm on PTO. So I want as much as relevant information in that document, not just for me to whip the hiring manager with, hey, you said this or you said that. But it's for the hiring manager, the interviewers, the recruiters to actually be able to pick up that rack out of nothing and run with it.
That's a really good kind of way to think about documentation, folks. It's there in case you're not there. And that's how you got to think about the summary document, what's agreed and what, even with the hiring manager. The hiring manager might disappear, you might disappear, someone else needs to come up and pick that up. That's the quality of documentation required after the summary. So you can't just get away with a quick email. Libby, you're about to say something. What is a good thing to send after the intake meeting or the kickoff meeting?
Yeah, I think depending on what the state of my notes look like, I'd be quite happy to share with them my kickoff meeting after the notes, the document after we've actually had that meeting. But generally, I would say in my previous role, in my previous company, it was a bit more structured. You know, we really had to have the SLAs in place as a reflection on both the hiring manager and myself, right? So then it was a case of, we will do this then, I will have the alignment meeting booked in then, we will have these two calls in between that time so that we can really touch base. I would say it's kind of flipped a little bit now because I'm sitting right next to my CTO, who's my main hiring manager at the moment. So now it was a case of, okay, do you have a minute? We can talk about this. But generally, it's a bit more relaxed, and I'm trying to put the meetings in place and calendar invites. I would say, you know, Slack is just a few messages here and there to update on things every now and then. It's been quite a quick process so far. So I would love to say that I have a really structured approach to the aftermath of the meeting, but I think it just comes naturally when you have that those touch bases in between.
It is, and it's also contextual as well. Like, what is the style of company you are, or what kind of relationships you have with the existing hiring manager team. I think one of the important things is that there are best practices that emerge that may be universal, but they always need to be interpreted in context before they're going to be of any value. Okay, you two, we're going to have to kick you off. Thank you so much for your contribution. Please do hang around. There's questions coming in. Maybe we'll get the time to bring you back. But Libby Fox, thank you so much for spending a bit of time with us. Great to see you on the show. We'll bring you back if you're up for it. And Mark, great to see you again, sir. We'll chat soon, sir.
Great to be here again. Thanks.
Well, cool, guys. I mean, obviously, we need to spend more time with a pair of them. But there's already a lot of really interesting things shared there, particularly about, you know, the structure of the conversation, how you position, how you document. Super, super interesting. But let's bring on Mary Kay Baldino here and Christy Spilka, because, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what I want to explore here. Oh, there's Mary Kay. Hi, Mary Kay. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Very well. Very well. Thank you. Mary Kay, welcome to the show. And quickly, can you introduce yourself for the folks who don't know you?
Sure. Hi, Mary Kay Baldino. I live in the Chicago area, and I just started at R1 RCM as the head of talent acquisition.
Cool. So this is like pertinent for you, isn't it?
You
know, how do you have, because when you start with a new company, there's Christy as well. Hi, Christy. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. Yourself?
Very well. Thank you. Christy, for the folks who don't know you, can you quickly intro yourself?
Sure. I'm Christy Spilka, Global Head of Talent Acquisition at iSIMS.
Fantastic. And actually, you're fairly recent with iSIMS as well, aren't you? Six months in or something?
I am.
So the pair of you, I think, have got some really good kind of perspective on this, because I want to kind of look at it from the head of talent perspective. You're coming into it and you're analyzing it. We all agree, you know what, this meeting is super important. How do you go about like improving it from what you found before? Because it may be that it was like not optimal or whatever. Like, how do you get other people to, you know, for this to be a systematic thing throughout the TA culture, rather than just something, you know, one recruiter does it amazingly and recruiter B doesn't actually do that so well? How do you make sure it cascades through? Do you take a hands-on approach? Do you, rally the head hiring manager yourself to do it? How does that work? Let's go to you first, Mary Kay. How do you instill sort of better kickoff meetings for the business?
So coming into a new organization, like I just recently did, it's about evaluating the current state, right? Are there standards around these kind of meetings? Are they consistently booked? Are there good notes, you know, preferably stored in the applicant tracking system, so there's some continuity if somebody has to hand off a search or hand off something, and so that there's shared information, a source of shared information about those. So looking at basic things like that, what kind of documentation exists, shadowing recruiters on those conversations and making sure that you understand what their current approach is. And then I also think it's also training and looking at what kind of training has the team historically been provided on this topic and related topics. I see this as really closely connected to how well do recruiters write job ad content and other kind of recruiting marketing content. So if you aren't doing these meetings extremely well, then you are unlikely to have the ability to do a really excellent job of marketing the role.
That's actually something I was about to say. And Christy, I want your thoughts on this. As someone who's kind of spent a little bit more time than Mary Kay in the organization, like, how do you know the intake meetings are good or bad, like when you first arrived there, like what is the signals of this? Mary Kay's mentioned already, maybe the job ad quality is not as high as it could be. Are there any other signals that you can say, you know what, maybe that's a weak spot in the team that we need to go ahead and fix?
I agree with Mary Kay. And I think also just in conversations with the team, you know, not necessarily bad, but maybe we just didn't get all of the detail that we needed to get. So if anytime I have somebody, you know, sitting in front of me and they say, hey, I'm struggling, I'm hitting a wall, I'm having a hard time with this role, the manager is, you know, changing their mind 7 times, they changed the interviewers, this is happening. I always go back to that first meeting. Tell me about what happened during the first call with the manager. How did they answer this question? Did you cover this? And then usually I find that it wasn't covered, which is often why you have some of that downstream effect. So it's also a great coaching tool to sit and talk about that and say, like, let's think about how that affected the rest of the process and why that's important to talk about.
Would you say that these things happen sort of as you spot them? Or is it a case where do you set aside time to say, we're going to review how we do intake meetings? How does that typically work? Because I've never actually held a departmental head role. I mean, my employers of the past have saw the wisdom of not appointing me to these positions of responsibility.
Treat me like you have.
you're not paid.
I get feedback and everything every single week.
Yeah, well, I mean, I need to tell you when people tell me, you know what I'm saying? Did you set it up like when you march into a new role? Did you have yourself a template of things that you need to do? Or how does that work?
Well, I do see it as something that requires some formal training and standards, right? It's a critically important part of the process. It's an opportunity for recruiters to truly be a consultant to the business and to be an advisor instead of an order taker. And so if you're going to have a value add recruiting team, this is one of the most important things for them to get right. Everything flows from these meetings. Everything that goes wrong in a search can usually be traced back to something that went wrong in these meetings. So, and likewise, things that go right can usually be traced back to what gets established in some of these meetings. So I think it's really, really critical. So if you don't do training and development with your team on this topic, then what are you training and developing them on?
What are the size of your teams? Steve's asked that on the chat here.
Yeah, so we have both an in-house and an RPO blend. So I would, you know, our team is about 65.
Do you treat them the same in terms of like how to the standards that they? You're obviously brand new, but do you treat them the same, and will you treat them the same in terms of the intake meetings and things?
In terms of standards, absolutely. You know, it's a different relationship when you have that RPO relationship and you're not directly managing the recruiters, but you're still as the client establishing what the performance standards are.
Christy, you've got presumably quite a large team as well.
Yeah, we are currently growing globally. I have openings, so anybody in the call interested, please let me know. We have sourcing opportunities too. I think everybody's hiring recruiters right now. So we're in the neighborhood of about 17 and we're currently adding globally.
When you're recruiting these recruiters, because both of you are doing this at this point, is it a way to assess a recruiter and how well they might handle this part of the process? Are there traits basically that you can identify and say, you know what, this person's going to be particularly strong at this particular moment of the recruiting process? Or is it actually just the technique that you can roll out to anybody?
I think so. The way that I go about it is I leverage Lou Adler's performance-based hiring. I love it. It's a roadmap. I can walk in with it. And it provides me a structure that is set that I've used for many, many years and have added to it, you know, made it my own. So I implement that. We actually have it within iSIMS, within our applicant tracking system. We have a form that everybody's aligned on. You know, you don't read it during your conversation, but you have a guideline of some of the major things that you need to cover, which include 4 big things. The, you know, what is the role? What are we talking about? Who are they going to work with, et cetera? What are the key objectives of this position? What do they need to accomplish in the role? If a manager starts talking about requirements, I redirect. Let's talk about the role first. So we talk about the objectives. Then we go into major challenges. Are there any challenges they're going to have in achieving these objectives, which is really important, especially for environment. And then EVP, employer value proposition. Why does somebody want this role? What are they going to learn, do, become? What is training like, et cetera? And from there, it's all of those other questions, you know, location, those other things too. So I think that really helps because it provides people with, you know, a guideline of here are some of the major things that we want to cover. Training and coaching. I put my whole team through performance-based hiring training and certification. You know, this is something that there is training available for, whether you go that route or a different route. I think training and coaching, we don't do enough of that in talent acquisition about this really critical part of the process. So I start there. And once you do that and you provide that training, it's that constant mentorship. You know, I'll hop on a call with my team and I'll lead part of it so they can kind of see how I do it and then learn from that. And so I think that is really important. And then from there, you start to see, you know, light bulbs go and people kind of start to understand that process and that cadence of how you're going through that process. And so to answer the question, I think it's really about providing that coaching and training more so than walking in and saying like, you know, can you do this well or not?
You know what? You mentioned Lou Adler a couple of times and we're already seeing people in the chat stream like giving Lou a whole lot of praise. I think I actually might have met Lou randomly at one point. I'm never a fanboy, but for him, I was like fanboying away. And I thought, you know what? I need a picture of this guy. But he is great and he's still producing amazing content. So I've just shared his LinkedIn in the chat stream there. So if you're not following Lou Adler, please do so. Let's have a look at these four things because I think they are quite useful. It's already a useful framework. There may not be too much need to reinvent the wheel here. I love the fact, firstly, Christy, you mentioned, you know, you've got to push back on the requirements straight away. You're not there just taking instructions and saying, hey, I need 5 years experience of this. No, you're going to be talking about, look, what does this job actually do? Like, what do you need this person for? What is this? You know, why is this a job even? I mean, sometimes you need to ask that question, right? Like, why do you need a human being to fill this? Or who is currently doing part of this that requires this to be a human being to really establish whether this is a role that you can support and help with. What do you do when you do that initial part of the assessment and it's your judgment that actually it's not really that important a job? I mean, there's going to be a situation where, yeah, there's like already somebody dealing with it. It's like, yeah, nice to have in his team or her team or whatever, but you know, you can't really think that's business critical. How do you handle that scenario? The hierarchy of priorities, everyone's busy, everyone's demanding TA time. You've got to defend that time and align it to the business. How do you make that, how do you have the conversation with the hiring manager to say, you know what, we can't really put this at top of the pile?
Boy, I think that backs up all the way to like workforce planning kind of conversations, right? Like how did that become, you know, a real requirement for the business and get all the way through whatever the approval process was for the budgets, et cetera, if it really wasn't necessary. So that's a great question. I think it's something that probably deserves more scrutiny inside some companies, but I know there's usually a very robust process to look at whether or not the role is going to need to exist or not before it gets to the recruiting team.
It also depends on size as well, doesn't it? I mean, I'm thinking smaller size, so potentially, you know, one recruiter might have to handle that. But if you've got a big size team, there will be a workforce planning department that agrees it. So by the time it hits TA, it's already something you need to run with. But it's an interesting conversation to have. Like every hiring manager, you can't dismiss everyone's got optimizing behavior. They want to have all your time and they'd rather have all your time, even if it means, you know, the colleague over there has less. So how do you juggle these competing demands? I think that's still an ongoing thing. So thoughts on this, Christy? You've got a member of the team and they're saying, you know what, I'm getting pulled left and right here. I don't have the time. How would you coach that person to have these conversations with these two hiring managers?
I think it's hard to have the conversation with the hiring manager directly because I'm a hiring manager. I wouldn't want somebody to come to me and say your role is not as important as this other one. So I think what's important is consistent alignment with the leader of that area. So, and if the leader of the area happens to be the hiring manager and they have multiple positions, like who's the ELT or who's the person that's going to decide which of these positions comes first, and then have that conversation. So, and I would encourage my recruiter to do that directly. Like, okay, let's talk about this and pull up the screen. You've got 25 openings. How should we prioritize these? Which ones need to come first? And then let them help you cascade that through their organization. Like, hey, we're going to prioritize this role and here's why. I think it comes better from them.
Yeah. Great idea, folks. Did you get that? Get the hiring managers to force rank the priorities themselves. You know, you can't have everything in one go, Mr. or Mrs. Hiring Manager. Tell me what's the most important if you had to, you know, literally live or die. These are the things that you need to have happen in this order. And then you align to that order. And at least that's kind of structured that way so that you're not getting this, you know, overwhelming do everything, do it now type of pressure.
I think for big hiring initiatives, it's just so critical to have those target start dates on a calendar where everybody knows we're going to fill these first and here's the time frame that we're shooting for, and then we'll focus on these others.
I just want to ask something. I'm conscious of time, but I want to ask something slightly provocative. And I've said for probably 10 years now that recruitment teams and employers, in fact, generally are addicted to vacancies. So we've talked about quite a lot today about the concept of the kickoff meeting and making a distinct project. But I wonder if that is at the expense of creating a talent pipeline culture where you've got just ongoing relationships and you're building pipelines where you've got basically you've got people on tap and, you know, they're just dripping in at exactly the right time that you need them. And maybe we should stop thinking about distinct programs, you know, thinking of every rec as a distinct program. I wonder if this is something that resonates.
I think that's a really important topic. And, you know, we leverage our CRM in addition to our ATS, and the CRM is where we're constantly pipelining and engaging talent. Mm-hmm. Whereas when a position opens, it's aligning, I think, on, you know, that particular role so that you can go look at your pipeline and then slot folks in. And if you've got an amazing talent pipelining strategy, to your point, if you're aligned to the business, if you already knew which roles were coming and that this role was going to come, then you're going to see your time to submit shrink, which I think is a really key metric.
Yeah, very important metric. The critical thing, though, I think, Adam, is your organization have a talent strategy where they're mature enough to be able to allow the recruiting organization to pipeline? Talent acquisition can't build pipelines for roles the business has no clarity on. So talent strategy, business maturity around these topics, and then recruiting and pipelining. And it can't really work in the reverse order.
Yeah, that's really, really good way to think about it. Because doing projects is great, but obviously it's quite time consuming to do. And we talked already, Mark and Libby were talking about, you need to have a precursor meeting, then a intake meeting, and an alignment meeting. All well and good, but obviously not mega scalable, right? So if you had a situation where you're able to constantly flow talent in, particularly if you could predict these are people you're going to hire, evergreen talent, so to speak, you might even be able to put these folks into a recruiting process even prior to like formal instruction from a hiring manager. If you knew that, hey, this person is always going to be interested in this data analyst type talent, you say, hey, listen, we've just found this seam of great data analysts. Do you want to get onto this now rather than wait 3 months when all these folks are literally going to disappear? So that may be a way to unlock this way of doing it. So two different ways, ways of working, I think. Okay, I was going to say something really quite important, but I've forgotten it. So we're going to have to kind of wax lyrical for a little bit.
It was a lie.
It's never important. I agree. I was reading through the chat stream and it was like really quite interesting to think, okay, All of these people have this commentary to make in terms of the relationships that we have with the hiring manager. And I want to kind of sort of focus a little bit on this again, especially head of department, the department to department head relationship. Do you think that is something that should be cultivated by heads of TA to support the other relationships that go maybe operationally? Or do you think that's kind of getting in the way a little bit? Do you think it's a useful thing for you as a head of TA to do, to interact with a head of engineering or a head of product or what have you?
Yeah, no, critically important. You have to have those relationships so that when there are operational issues, that you can go and have the more strategic conversations about what's breaking down. And it's a mutual accountability thing as well. You have to be willing to have that mutual accountability from one leader to another.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's really important. And regular meetings, you know, if you have the opportunity to, depending on the size of your company, do I meet with the ELT, the area, the VP, once a month, once a quarter, whatever that looks like, check-ins, how's it going? Any feedback for me? Here's some feedback for you. You know, I noticed that it's taking us, you know, 3 times longer to put people through a process in your organization. Let's talk about that. How do we start streamlining that? I need your help. How can you help me? Can I hop on one of your leader calls with all of your managers and walk them through this process? Just getting that continuous engagement, buy-in from them, and support from them for the rest of their direct organization is really critical.
You know, this leads to kind of another key part of the function you two have, which is to represent the department internally with the other function in the business and almost be the evangelist for the department. That's probably going to be another show. Like, how do you present in the right way? How do you kind of position the function in such a way that it is a respected and valued function within the wider group there? Okay, cool. Let's talk about sort of coming to the kind of really burning a huge amount of time here. I didn't realize how little time we have. But what is the thing that you see that TA teams in general make an error on in this part of the process that if you could correct, you correct tomorrow? That the thing you find yourself coaching more than anything, this is a common error. We make it all the time. Let's stop doing that. What would that be? Thoughts on this? Let's go to you, Mary Kay.
I think if I connect two things, one is not preparing hiring managers. So if you're going to have an equal partnership, managers have to come to those meetings with an idea of what the agenda is and some pre-thought, ideally. And that requires getting them used to it. I think the other thing is that, you know, that not coming out of that meeting with some clear documentation and takeaways, also something that I see happen a lot, you know, no notes stored anywhere, no sort of transparency with the manager about this is how we're going to go from here based on our conversation. So those would be two things.
Anything to add to that, Christy?
I think one thing that I've just seen in my years in recruiting is that focus on not just the requirements of the job. A lot of folks start with what's your must have, what's your nice to have, but we need to start with what's the job? What do you need them to do in the job? And how are they going to be challenged in doing that in this job? And what is the EVP? Some of those things I just mentioned. So I think if you're starting there, then the second piece of that is once you have all of that information, displaying that on the job posting. And I know Mary Kay said this earlier, it's what are you putting on that job posting? Is your summary exciting? Did you take the time? Because if you took the time to spend on the job posting of here's my EVP right here in the summary, I'm going to try to get people to apply because I'm going to share with them what they could do, how they're going to grow in this role. Responsibilities, you know, keep those short, keep them impactful. What did the manager say are those objectives and exciting challenges that they're going to have? Get those on the responsibilities. And then in the requirements, we should have streamlined that in the first call. So maybe there's some stuff in there that we don't need. You know, let's take some of that out. Let's keep it as to the absolute, these are the requirements for the position. And what are they going to do with those things? Don't just say you need to know Excel. You're going to create pivot tables in Excel that you can so that you can help the business gain insights into X, Y, and Z. And if you do that, you know, your job posting is going to work better for you. And maybe you can spend a little bit less time sourcing in this market, you know, that's questionable, but I do think it helps. It will move the needle.
Yeah, and probably and getting kind of a great candidate through a job ad is such a multiplier in terms of time saved, right? Yes. So that additional effort that you can spend to craft a great job advert is worth it, even if it doesn't hit every time. That one hire is going to make it worthwhile. I remember what I was going to say, which I thought was quite important. Hiring managers are very variable in terms of their own ability to recruit. We all know this. Certain hiring managers have really switched onto it. They really enjoy this part of the role and they've dove into it. Other hiring managers almost resent this function of their job, and they say, you know what, why am I doing these interviews or what have you? And that has a huge impact on TA, of course. How do you go about handling that second type of manager? I can't imagine a more junior recruiter in the team really struggling with this situation. What do you as a TA leader do to sort that out?
Yeah, so I think it's a really good question. And I'm really fortunate right now in that my organization, we're a TA company. Everybody knows how important it is. It's been amazing. I can say, in the past, if I've encountered that, I've coached the recruiter to have a conversation with the hiring manager about why is this role really important to you? How is it impactful to your business? How does it affect you achieving your goals? If this role stays open for a month, is that going to impact you? And helping them to think about that and sharing with them maybe other success stories. Let me tell you about how I partnered with this other manager and how by doing these activities, we were able to fill their role 5 times faster. Anytime you can use data or things like that, it's always very helpful as well. And then I'm always happy to help my team. So I'll say, if you need help, come tell me and we'll have a conversation with the manager together if we need to. So I think it's that support as well.
Can I plug a few companies here that I really think of produce software that's in a fairly new category, but it's like interview analytics type of stuff, where it suddenly allows TA to kind of monitor, very clearly, this hiring manager has a significantly lower conversion rate in terms of, getting offers to hire, or their interviews are really shorter than everyone else's, and these are the outcomes. And I'm thinking maybe this is going to be something really helpful for TA and overall in the business to say, almost as a coaching tool for the hiring managers to say, these are the outcomes we're seeing. Is there a way in which we could support it so that we can get better outcomes for the business? So a couple, I think, come to the top of mind. Bright Hire, for instance, our friends over, I think they're in New York. Also, a company called MetaView in the UK do similar, where they're doing kind of like analytics on what's happening at interview with the candidates and then figuring out, this hiring manager tends to ask too many questions of this type to this demographic of people. Why is that happening? We need to potentially coach that better. Let's move on to questions because we are like well over time and I'm chewing up sort of important time for these two ladies here. That's very important. I don't do that. Trish Revelle has asked a very simple question. Is one meeting good enough to do a kickoff? Yes, no? Quickly, Mary Kay?
Not always. Yeah, okay. Not always. There are managers who come into the meeting, really haven't thought through the things that they need to be able to answer for you. Or you need to do some additional calibration and follow up after the meeting. So sometimes no, and it's okay if it takes more than one conversation, as long as you get to the right outcomes.
Do you know what, Mary Kay? I think it's important that it is a no, because if the information you get is unsatisfactory, you might need to definitely go back and have a second meeting with that manager in order to put that right. And that's also including the relationship negotiation part also. If it's a not satisfactory outcome, person's turned up, he's not prepared or whatever it is, reset the meeting. Next one's to you, Christy. I haven't actually looked at these questions, so I'm throwing them out at you. I hope that's okay. Marston said, how do you collaborate with HRBPs in this process? I guess that's a really long answer potentially, but any thoughts on this, Christy?
Yeah, I think it depends on the organization, but I think the HR business partners are critical. the HRBP leader here at ISIMS and I are hip to hip on everything. And I think that's so important. And partnering for recruiting teams with their HR business partners, especially as you're hearing things in the alignment meeting, you know, hey, what's happening in the business? Anything I should know? I do think that collaboration is important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the first time we spoke about HR, and that's probably evidence of our kind of tunnel vision sometimes, but we have to remember that they're a huge part of this process. Particularly, you know, the monitoring sort of things about the team, the monitoring about retention often, they can often predict vacancies for us. So those things are super important. Okay, let's have a look at this one here. Last question. At what point do you decide to walk away from a client? Holy crap. Is that ever something that happens? I mean, there is a recalcitrant hiring manager. Like, you just have ID'd this person to say, you know what, nothing good going to happen with this person. Like, do you pull back? Like, how do you handle that?
I think it's more like an escalation, right? So if you're really dealing with a very poor manager, your job is to be a consultant to them and to give them the information that they need to make better decisions. But if they just refuse to make better decisions, then there's a conversation that needs to happen at a higher level in the organization, because that is just a really poor performer who's jeopardizing their whole department.
Yeah.
Can I ask, do you agree with what I said earlier, which is that you should have an SLA? Because if hiring managers are wasting your team's time or not doing what they're meant to be doing, I really do feel like you should withdraw service, because it's just not acceptable. Is that like, am I being too strict about it? You know?
No, not at all. I think I have in other organizations, you know, where I haven't been brand new, actually canceled requisitions where it was just really clear that there was no, we were not going to get any traction and we were not going to be able to work on that search. And it was really supported by upper management because there wasn't a clear reason. And when you got down to it, so that's incredibly rare, but I do think that this is a collaborative process. This is not a service delivery where the hiring managers are just passively sitting back and accepting services. So if it's collaboration, then the SLAs go in both directions.
I agree. I think it's really important to say, here's what you can expect of me. Here's what I need from you. That's part of that alignment. I need your feedback within a couple of days of your interview max. By the way, it's fresh on your mind at that point, and I need to keep the process moving for you. Here's what's in it for you by achieving these SLAs. And like Mary Kay, other organizations I've worked in that were maybe high volume where we had to move really fast, you know, I have put positions on hold before where we haven't heard from the manager in 2 weeks. Like, is this still a position? Like, do we still right. need this role? So I do think that's important.
Yeah, I think have gone.
Imagine the shame of being asked by your boss why your team's underperforming and why it's under-resourced, and you have to admit that internal TA have withdrawn a relationship because you haven't been, you know, doing what you're meant to be doing. That would be terrible.
It actually gives you a significant degree of leverage, doesn't it? If you Absolutely. Can say, hey, listen, you know, if we're going to send these candidates, we're going to need some feedback within 24 hours of interview. Otherwise, we're going to lose the candidate. That's the expectation. If they can't agree to that, or whatever the number you've agreed internally, if they breach that, then there may be like a decision tree to say, okay, if that's the case, then we move that position. We have to deprioritize. We have to move it to a different type of role. Okay, so we definitely need SLAs, I think. I think that's about it. We're well over time, folks. So I want to thank Mary Kay and Christy for joining us. It's been wonderful having you on the show. I hope you'll come back at some other point and discuss maybe how to present into the rest of internally as well. I think that's a really important element of this job that perhaps we don't talk about enough. Like, how do we represent TA within the corporate world? So Mary Kay and Christy, thank you so much for your time. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Great being here. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Cool. Listen, we're well over time, so I want to finish with final thing. I should have done this mid-show, but we're going to try and connect everyone who's had a chance to participate in the show here. So everyone in the chat stream, here's your opportunity to put your LinkedIn into the chat stream now, because what's going to happen is you should be then connecting with everyone else who is part of this conversation. Don't let us stop this conversation from happening. If you want to have other conversations with people that have also contributed here, now is your moment to have a connection with those folks and you can carry on talking about it. I think that the only good things will happen if we keep on having that type of dialogue. So go ahead and share your LinkedIn in the chat stream. Okay, Adam, sorry for taking too much time, man. I hope that was okay. My time management is always terrible. I don't know how to cut it down. I think it's naturally longer than 60 seconds, 60 minutes, isn't it? What are your thoughts?
I think we're in the spirit of transparency here. If you've told the guests that it might be more than 60 minutes, then that's fine.
I haven't. And I'm super conscious of like,
probably need to do that.
Yeah. It's like people like literally got other stuff to do. So,
Just missed their first meeting.
I know. And they, maybe I should say what you often do when you're like got a hard stop. It's like, if there's a hard stop, just walk out. That's okay.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's okay to simply walk out. Because you know, we can carry on basically. Yeah. Okay. That is about it. Adam, who are you playing tomorrow?
It's like an old guy's mini round robin against White Craigs and Carpa.
Is it two teams that have been thrown together, or has one been training for a period of time, or what?
No, nobody's been training.
Good.
It's just old boys. It's the over 35s team for three local Glasgow clubs. And start of the season, we always do like a kind of round robin, 3 25-minute matches.
Right. I hope ambulances are on standby.
I hope they're not needed more at the point.
It's going to be carnage. Anyway, take care of yourself. Enjoy the game. I'm sure everything will be fine. All right, folks, that's about it. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Follow the channel if you like this type of stuff. We'll be back next week. We are talking about how to organize events. So if you want to get people signing up and showing up to stuff, sign up to this because we are going to be speaking to event organizers that know how to do this or have learned how to do this. And this, I think, essential for anybody who's doing anything online or in person or what have you. So, okay, that's it. I will see you. We'll see you next time.
Bye.